Trumas Perek Aleph Mishnah Hey 1:5. This Mishnah has one basic principle to convey, which is that when you take Truma from one batch on behalf of another batch of produce, they both have to be on equal footing in terms of their Truma obligations for that to work. So what does that mean? That means, let's say, for example, you have two buckets, bucket A and bucket B, and bucket A has grain and bucket B has grain. So let's say, for argument's sake, that there's 50 cups of grain in bucket A and 50 cups of grain in bucket B. So the proper thing to do is to take 1/50th of your produce as truma gedola. So that would mean, since you have a total of 100 cups of grain between the two buckets, you could either take one cup from A and one cup from B and make that truma, or you could simply take two cups from B and say, these two cups are truma for the combined batches of A and B together. I have 100 cups altogether, and two out of the 100, 2%, I'm taking all from bucket B, which would be for both, and that would make both containers, both A and B, now tithe properly. So that would work, provided that A and B, the two containers, have equal truma liability. If they're not on equal footing for whatever reason, then it won't work. That's the point of our Mishnah. So our Mishnah will go through a series of possibilities of what might be in bucket B, and it will say for all those things, if your bucket A is just regular produce, let's say 50 cups of flour, and bucket B has 50 cups of flour which are of a particular type, and the Mishnah lists all sorts of types, so then it will no longer be effective to take from B on behalf of A. That's the whole thrust of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah starts out by saying, Ein tarmin min haleket u'min ha'shicha u'min ha'peya. You can't take from bucket B on behalf of A and B together if what's in bucket B is leket, or shicha, or peya. What are those things? You might recall from Maseches Peya. Leket are the stalks, one or two stalks that fall as one is cutting the grain in the field. If one or two stalks fall, then they're to be left for the poor to collect. Shicha is the forgotten sheaves. So when one conveys small piles of sheaves that have been sitting in the sun to dry out to the threshing floor to be processed, if one overlooks one or two sheaves, bundles of grain in the field, so then he can't go back to collect those sheaves. He has to leave them again for the poor. That's shicha. And finally, peya. Peya is the requirement to leave a section of your field unharvested. You leave it as standing grain and leave it for the poor people to come and collect that grain. So, leket, shicha, and peya are all gifts to the poor, matanos leaniyim, and they're all exempt from tithing requirements. That is to say, when a poor person goes and collects his leket, shicha, or peya, he doesn't need to tithe it. No truma must be taken from that grain that he collected. So that being the case, since if what's in container B is leket, shicha, or peya, then container B is exempt from tithing requirements, and that being the case, you can't take grain from container B and say this will be the truma on behalf of container A, because what's in container B, the leket, shicha, or peya, is not required in truma, while the container A is indeed required in truma, so it won't work. Similarly, the Mishnah says, umina hefker. If what's in container B is hefker produce, hefker means odorless produce, so then odorless produce being exempt from tithing obligations will also not be a legitimate source for taking truma on behalf of container A. So the hefker that the Mishnah is talking about, the primary category of hefker, would be food that grew, you know, that grew wild. And that being the case, it was ownerless. And so since this grain is just, you know, growing in the field and no one owns it, so it's exempt from tithing obligations. And if one went and collected that hefker ownerless grain from the fields, you know, the wild grain growing, it's exempt from truma requirements. And therefore, if one would take truma from that container B, let's say, on behalf of A, it wouldn't work. A second possibility of hefker, however, is where a person owned grain, let's say, and then he decided that he just relinquishes ownership. He says, I have more than I need. I'm putting it out in my front stoop, and whoever wants to take it, help themselves. I'm declaring it ownerless. So now that also is hefker, and that also would work, but only under limited circumstances. The circumstances are that at the time when the person who owned this grain declares it ownerless, the grain had not yet been required to be tithed. It meaning that the hefker, the declaration of ownership, of relinquishing of ownership, occurs prior to the obligation to tithe this grain. So the normal time that one, that grain is obligated in tithing, we're talking about grain here, is called meruach hakri, the smoothing of the piles, the stacking of the grain at the very end of the processing. But in general, for all produce, the time at which the obligation to tithe kicks in is at what's called gemar malacha, when one has finished processing that particular foodstuff. So while meruach, smoothing of the pile and stacking it away, is the last step in the processing of grain, if you're producing oil or wine, for example, so one doesn't stack oil, it's when the finishing of the pressing of the oil and storing into the jars occurs. And same with wine, again, it's when you finish pressing the grapes and collect it into jars or into the whatever storage facility, that is when the finishing of the processing of the grapes or, you know, the or oil occurs. So whatever is appropriate, once that last step has occurred, gemar malacha, so now there's an obligation to tithe this produce. And if one says after the fact, you know what, I have more wine than I need, and you leave out some bottles of wine for someone to help themselves to, if that wine hasn't been tithed, then that wine is still must be tithed. And that being the case, even though it was declared ownerless, if one had a container B which was filled with wine that had passed, already had gemar malacha occurred to it, had been processed, so then indeed you could tithe from B onto A. So again, what we're talking about over here when it says hefker means that in container B is either produce that grew in the utter wild that never was owned by anybody and therefore is never obligated in tithing, or B, it was owned by a person but that person then relinquished ownership prior to the time at which tithing obligations kick in. The reason why, for what it's worth, hefker produce, ownerless produce, is exempt from tithing requirements is because the pasuk, the verse stipulates that a rationale why there's a tithe in the first place, and that is that the tribe of Levi, which also includes the Kohanim who are getting the Truma, but this applies for a Meiser as well, which is for the Levium, so they never got a portion of land in Eretz Israel, so they're dependent upon the land-owning rest of the population to provide for them produce. It's actually the, and therefore there's a drasha. The pasuk says, "Uvah Levi," and the Levi will come. Ki ein lo chelek v'nachla imach, and he, the Levi, doesn't have a portion and inheritance of the land with you. And this is a reference to the Levi getting a portion, a gift. But since the Levi and you have equal portions in hefker, it's equally ownerless, and therefore Yado v'yadcha shavin, your hand and his hand are equal in terms of their access to hefker produce. That's why there's no requirement to give from the hefker produce tithes to the Levi. Okay, the Mishnah continues and says, v'loma maiser rishon shnit l'trumaso. Also, if what's in container B is maiser rishon, that was the gift that is given to the Levi normally after truma gedola is taken, that had its truma taken from it. Now, obviously, if we're talking about generic food that had its truma taken, now it's given as miser, so it goes without saying that there's no obligation to tithe this further, and therefore it's exempt produce. And that being the case, of course, if you have a container B post truma taken food, and in container A not yet truma taken food, so of course you can't tithe from B and A because B is exempt from further tithing, whereas A still has to be tithed. So that's not our case at all. What our case is that the Levi went to the landowner and he sort of jumped in front of the line. The normal order of operations is first you separate Truma Gadola for the Kohen, and then what's left, you give 10% of that to the Levi as Maaser Rishon. But this Levi came, and prior to the finishing of the processing of the grain, let's say, so therefore the obligation to take the Truma hasn't kicked in yet, the Levi says, do me a favor and give me my 10% now. So he takes that produce prior to it ever reaching the point of being obligated in Truma Gadola, because he took it, let's say, as stalks, or whatever the story is, prior to them having been the processing of the grain occurring. In such a case, that miser that the Levi gets will be slightly a bigger portion for him, because he's not giving anything to the Kohen as Truma Gadola, and it will never be obligated in Truma Gadola. And therefore, since it's, you know, it's essentially going to be sides of the Truma Gadola issue. Now, that Maaser Rishon still will have another obligation. That obligation is to take the Trumas Miser. You'll recall that the same way the Yisrael gives a portion of his produce to the Kohen as Truma Gedola, so too the Levi gives a portion of his produce that he received as Miser Rishon as Truma as well. The Levi's portion is called Trumas Miser. So what the Mishnah is saying is, if there's a Levi and he jumped in front of the line, so to speak, and before the produce ever was obligated to have Truma Gedola taken from it, the Levi requests his 10% and receives it as Maaser Rishon. So then there'll never be Truma Gedola taken from this. There's just the obligation to take Trumas Maaser. And once the Trumas Maaser has been taken and given to a Kohen, if now the Levi has two containers, A and B, and in container B is his Maaser Rishon that he got by jumping in front of the line and has Trumas Maaser removed from it already, he cannot use what's in container B now to exempt, you know, take from there to exempt what's in container A obligations of Truma Gedola. That won't work. An important diuk here, an inference, and it's really based on psukim, it's not just an, you know, is that, yeah, if the Maaser Rishon had not yet had its Truma, its Trumas Maaser removed from it, so it's Maaser Rishon that's obligated in Trumas Maaser, so such Maaser Rishon could be used as a source for Truma Gedola in container B to exempt what's in container A. It would work, which really it's based on a pasuk and a fine, but it goes to show you that really that Truma Gedola and Trumas Maaser are really essentially on equal footing. They're basically the exact same thing. It's just that Truma Gedola comes from the Yisrael, landowner, whoever he is, and that Trumas Maaser comes from the Levi's portion, but they're both otherwise essentially the exact same thing. Okay. Next, the Mishnah says, "V'lo m'maaser sheni v'hektesh sheniftu." So these are two separate things. We have maaser sheni, the second tithe, and hektesh. Hektesh is property which has been consecrated to the Beis Hamikdash. If you have either of those two types of foodstuffs, even if they've been redeemed, meaning they've now their sanctity has been removed from them onto coins because they've been reclaimed from their maaser sheni or hektesh status, even so, they are exempt from. They're exempt from having truma taken from them. As I'll explain in a moment, and that being the case, if they're in container B, you can't use it as a source to get truma for, you can't use what's now in container B with the one of those two things to get truma, take truma on behalf of what's in container A. So let's just go through these things here. Maaser Sheni, so Aratana holds actually that Maaser Sheni, that second tithe, that is, remember, after you give your Truma Gedola and your Maaser Rishon, then in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the 7-year cycle, you'll take another tenth of what remains and set it aside to be taken to Jerusalem, to Yerushalayim, and be eaten over there. Now, Aratana, the author of our Mishnah, holds that that second tithe that you're taking to Yerushalayim, to Jerusalem, actually doesn't belong to you. It's really what's called mamon gavoa, which means property belong to on high. In other words, it's essentially God's food, and it belongs to God. But when you go to Yerushalayim and you eat it there, essentially, conceptually, God is inviting you to sit at the table with him, so to speak, and partake of his food. So you're, so to speak, God's guest eating God's food, and that is the Maaser Sheni. Which is called Mamun Gavoa. It's the property of heaven. That being the case, since it's Mamun Gavoa, it doesn't belong to an individual person, and therefore it wouldn't be obligated under the normal obligations of tithing, of Truma, is ineligible there. So that goes almost without saying, that if it's Mamun Gavoa, that there's never an obligation to tithe, and that being the case, you don't take Truma from Maaser Sheni, and that being the case, if what's in your container B is Maaser Sheni, you couldn't use that as a source to get Truma to exempt what's in container A. But our Mishnah is actually talking about something even more than that. It's saying even after Sheniftu, you have done Pidyon, you've redeemed that Maaser Sheni. What is that talking about? So when a person sets aside that tenth to take to eat in Yerushalayim, he has the option of not taking the food to Yerushalayim and instead transferring the Kedusha, the sanctity that is inherit, embedded into that Maaser Sheni, onto coins, onto money. And then he can take that money to Yerushalayim and use the money to purchase foodstuffs in Yerushalayim, and the Kedusha, the sanctity, transfers then back from the money onto the foodstuff, and you can then eat the foodstuff in Yerushalayim as Maaser Sheni. So if you had what's originally Maaser Sheni, but then you deconsecrate it by transferring the Kedusha, that's called Pidyon. Pidyon refers actually to something like an internal transformation. Here it's transforming, if you will, the status of this food to being from sanctified Maaser Sheni to being generic, deconsecrated, profane chulin food. So you might have thought perhaps that now that it's been deconsecrated and now it's just regular old food, it now might be a legitimate source for taking truma gedola, since you never took truma from this food ever. But the answer is no, it's not. It's exempt from truma taking, and therefore if what's in your container B is deconsecrated food that had been Maaser Sheni, it's not a legitimate source, since it's not obligated in truma, to take truma from that container B on behalf of what's in container A. As for the hektish and niftu, so now we're talking about produce that was consecrated and given to be the property of the Beis HaMikdash. That's called hektish. So when a person has any asset, he's allowed to essentially give it to become property of the Beis HaMikdash. And when he does that, he imbues that thing that he's giving with sanctity as Mikdash property. So there are two kinds of categories of these things. Some of them are things that could go directly on the Mizbeach, on the altar, as an offering. Like if he consecrates, for argument's sake, his cow. And that would give it embedded intrinsic Kedusha, which could never leave. But if a person consecrates something which has no place on the Mizbeach, on the altar, like his pen, for argument's sake, or his apples, whatever the heck it is, so then when he consecrates that and says, this is going to be apples or a pen for the Beis HaMikdash, so it just gets a status of also of sanctity. It's called Bedek HaBayis, which means sort of assets that are there for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash can do what it wants with it, and what it will do with it ultimately is auction it off. It'll essentially just sell that pen or those apples on their eBay site or through Christie's, I don't know how they'll do it, and when the person who purchases those apples or pen gives the money, so the sanctity of the apple or pen is lifted from the apples and pen, leaving them now totally deconsecrated and chulin, profane, and the sanctity goes back onto the money, which will be in the hands of the Beis HaMikdash. So our case here, we're talking about where a person, let's say, had a wheat field, and he says, I'm going to give this wheat field as a gift to the Beis HaMikdash. I'm going to be makdishit. I'm going to consecrate my field to become Beis HaMikdash property. So while it's in the hands, the field is in the hands of the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash isn't a private person, and the psukim, the verses that require tithing and truma to be taken, don't apply to the Beis HaMikdash. So while it's in the hands of the Mikdash, it's exempt from tithing. However, when the Beis HaMikdash puts the field now up for auction with Christie's, or whoever, so to speak, and sells that field, the purchaser will give good money for the field, and the field will become deconsecrated, the sanctity transferring on to the coins. So, if, this is the million-dollar question, the question, if you want to know, is the grain now in this field liable to tithing? The answer is, it depends. If the time when it was deconsecrated, when it was this stuff was sold back to some person of the public, it was already past, it had been processed, and meaning that the grain had been harvested, and it had been threshed and winnowed and stacked. Meiruach HaKri, at the Gemar Malacha, the finishing of the processing had occurred. So then, it's too late. It passed through the window when the Truma obligation would have been there, but it wasn't there because it was property of the Mikdash. And now that means that after the fact, when someone goes and buys that grain and deconsecrates it and does pidyon on it, it's too late. It will never be obligated in tithing. If, on the other hand, the buyer of this wheat field buys it prior to the finishing of the processing of the grain, so then he himself, under his auspices, will finish the processing and do Gemar Malacha, if that's the case. So then, now, when he finishes it, since he's a private person, there will be an obligation to tithe his grain, even though it had in the past once belonged to the Beis HaMikdash, that's not relevant. So the case of our Mishnah is Hektesh and Niftu, deconsecrated Hektesh, is a case where a person gave his, let's say, wheat field to the Beis HaMikdash, and then someone else redeemed that wheat after it had finished being processed, after Gemar Malacha. So now when this person repurchased the wheat is forever exempt from tithing, and if that's what's in his container B, wheat that he purchased from the Beis HaMikdash as now deconsecrated Hektish, since it's never going to have to be tithed, it's exempt from tithing, if that's what's in container B, he can't take from that container B to exempt what's in container A. Okay, we're over the hump now. The rest of the Mishnah is basically just simply, you know, continuing the same theme, saying lo mina velo mina chayav lapator. If what's in container B is something that's obligated in tithing, but container A contains something that is not obligated in tithing, it's pater from tithes, for whatever reason, even if it's like intrinsically exempt from tithing, like for example, it didn't grow fully before it was harvested, or whatever the story is, velo mina pater al chayav, or same goes if what's in the container B is the patur, and what's in container A is the chiyuv, has to be tithed. Since they're on equal footing, you can't take from B on behalf of A. V'lo mina talush ala mechubar. If you are talking about talush is detached from the ground grain, and mechubar is still attached to the ground grain. So one can't really tithe his produce while it's attached to the ground, just can't work. That being the case, he can't take from attached grain and say, there will be designated the truma from the detached grain because they're on equal footing. And same goes v'lo mina mechubar ala talush. If he has some detached grain in container B, he can't designate his truma for the attached to the ground still produce in his field. It just won't work. V'lo mina chadash ala yashan. V'lo mina yashan ala chadash. This is not referring to chadash, meaning grains that, you know, came from before, prior to the offering of the Omer Korban or something like that. We're not talking about that. Chadash and Yashan simply here mean Chadash is this year's crop, and Yashan means last year's crop. So assuming we're talking about grain, and the fiscal year transitions at Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei, so that being the case, we're saying grain that came from before Rosh Hashanah, if that's, that will be considered to be Yashan. If that's what's in container B, and what's in container A is grain that came after Rosh Hashanah, so you can't take from B on A, because they're not of equal status in terms of tithing obligations. And same goes, if what you have in container B is this year's crop, the Chadash, you can't take from there on behalf of what's in container A, the Yashan. Now, the reason why these two containers, which are filled with grain, just regular generic grain from two different years, you can't tie the one on the other, or from one on behalf of one for the other, is because there's a separate pasuk, a verse that requires that each fiscal year, in this case when it comes to grains anyways, it's every calendar year, but the fiscal year for Tu B'Shvat, so the fiscal year for tree fruits might be different, but anyways, let's stick to this. Each year must be tithed on its own, as the pasuk says, aser ta'aser, it's called tfuas zarecha. You will certainly tithe all the produce you have, all the seed, Hayotze hasadeh shana shana, that comes from the field, out of the field, shana shana, year by year, which comes to tell you that each year has to be tithed on its own. Fine. And finally, v'loma peiros ha'aretz al peiros chutz la'aretz, and v'loma peiros chutz la'aretz al peiros ha'aretz. If you have a container B, produce that grew in Eretz Yisrael, and in container A, produce that grew outside of Eretz Yisrael, well, the Eretz Yisrael produce is obligated in tithes, because it's a tithing in general, is a mitzvah tliyah ba'aretz. It's only applicable to produce that grew in Eretz Yisrael. So since they're not on equal footing, you can't take from the container B, if let's say it has Eretz Yisrael produce, on behalf of container A, which is exempt from tithing. And similarly, if you have in container B produce from outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's exempt from tithing, so then you can't take from A on behalf of, excuse me, you can't take from B, which has your Chutz La'aretz produce on behalf of A, which has your Eretz Yisrael produce, which is obligated to be tithed. If that last clause sounds too obvious, because the same principle again and again, the chiddush is that there's a number of all the neighboring countries essentially around Eretz Yisrael, even though on a Torah level they're exempt from tithing, the rabbis require tithing. So that is Bavel, modern day Iraq, let's call it, Mitzrayim to the south, that's modern day Egypt. Ammon and Moab, basically modern-day Jordan, essentially. Syria, modern-day Syria, let's call it. All those areas are required to be tithed midrabbanan. So that is to say, just to paint the picture, if you have in container A food from Eretz Yisrael, and in container B you have food from Syria, you will have to tithe both containers, A and B. But you can't take from B on behalf of A or vice versa, because the obligation to tithe the stuff from Syria is only rabbinic, whereas the obligation to tithe from Eretz Yisrael is Doraisa from the Torah, and they're on equal footing, and that being the case, you can't take tithes on one on behalf of the other. And the Mishnah concludes by saying, V'im tarmu, and if you did take truma in any of these cases from B on behalf of A, ein truma san truma, What you took simply isn't truma. That taking of truma is utterly ineffective.